Some of you may be old enough to still remember the channeling craze that swept the United States in the 1970s and 80s. This was a time when individuals on the Earth claimed to be able to channel and speak in the voices of disincarnate beings who might be souls who no longer needed to incarnate, prophets or initiates of the past, or just as likely, angelic beings of different groupings and hierarchies. This then faded away to be replaced then by the angel craze of the late 80s and 1990s, in which hundreds of thousands of individuals reported visitations by angels and sightings of angelic hosts in many different areas of the United States, some of which were actually the places in which people had claimed visitations by aliens coming from UFOs during the UFO alien craze from the 50s through the early 70s. At this time, then, the focus was on specifically angelic beings who had names, who had favorite colors, who visited people on certain days of the week, and were also very often attached to different kinds of virtuous behavior, at least in the East Coast of the United States, and to a compassionate attitude towards people's needs and hurt feelings on the West Coast of the United States. I, in fact, still have a drinking mug given to me by one of my primary school students at this time. I treasure it. It says, "My teacher is an angel." And it was very nice because it really counterbalanced the t-shirt that I had been given by a group of seventh graders in the preceding class in the early 80s, which said, "My teacher channels Satan." And then I also have a dog-eared edition of the Da Vinci Code, that great craze of the 90s and early 21st century, that is, which was given to me by my students who wrote in the front, "Finally, someone else who thinks the strange thoughts that you do, Mr. Schwartz." So you can see that I've really been through the mill when it comes to phases and crazes about the spiritual world. I'm not sure what it is these days, maybe the Tea Party or just the general raft of conspiracy theories that seem to always be quite popular. So in any case, I just preface this as I talk now about Rudolf Steiner's picture of some of these beings, the hierarchies. And we're going to talk about a whole range of them, some of them even the channelers didn't pick up on. And you might at some point, probably about 20 minutes into this, be thinking to yourself, what is the purpose of listening to this? Why in the world would I really want to know all of this stuff? And how is it linked in any way to the real work that needs to be done out of anthroposophy? These are all valid questions. And I promise you that at the end, when we've gone on this long cosmic journey together, I will try to answer those questions. Why was it that particularly in the first 10, 15 years of the 20th century, that Rudolf Steiner returned again and again to discussions about the hierarchical beings, these beings who one would imagine are so incredibly distant, so removed. Why did they seem to be so vitally important for us to learn about, at least at that time, and I think at this time as well? So let's just slowly start to learn something about them. And you can quit at any time. isn't it nice to have something online? Just think if you try to walk out of the room in the middle of an anthroposophical lecture, the looks that you will get and the incredibly wounded feelings that you will elicit from that lecturer. I have no clue whether you've already quit or not. So that's one nice thing about the anonymity of the online. Okay. What's nice about Steiner's discussion about these beings is that it's based on something. They're not just floating off there in cosmic space. He gives us an anchor. And the anchor is we ourselves. It's our own nature, our own being. That is to say, we begin with the fourfold human being and move from there. So once again, we are something of the scaffold on which we can step. We sort of step on ourselves, and that helps us gain some insight into these vitally important beings. So just to review again, we human beings, our constitution is fourfold. We have a physical body, above that an etheric body, that in turn melds with our astral body at times, other times does not, and then an ego. And we spoke also of these soul principles that we have, the sentient, the intellectual or mind soul, and the consciousness soul. And then if you've chosen to listen to those lectures before listening to this one, I also spoke about these three states that are in potentia, that are not here yet for most of us, in at least not much. The spirit self, which is the ego's transformation of our astral body, the life spirit, the ego's penetration of and transformation of the etheric body, and finally, spirit man, the ego's penetration of transformation of the physical body. And I promised in that discussion to say something about this term spirit man rather than spirit human. And that will be one of the bonuses if you are able to stick with this lengthy discursion on the hierarchies. So we are fourfold and potentially sevenfold beings. Now, who is the angel? The angel is, on the one hand, a being who comes very close to the earthly plane, and many angels serve as guardian angels. They look over the human being, guard and protect that human being. And this is, of course, a very ancient picture. And some of you probably, when you were young, especially if you're of the Christian faith, may have even heard about this guardian angel and perhaps even prayed to that being. I think that there's many a parent, I would count myself among them, who has watched his or her very young child, perhaps one who's confidently walking enough that he or she starts to run and takes off at incredible speed and suddenly is at risk, or perhaps has been climbing or is hanging over the stairway, doing something that places him or herself in a very dangerous situation that could be injurious, could even be life-threatening. And few, very few are the parents who have not watched their child suddenly, as it were, turned away from, picked up from somehow completely deflected from taking that one wrong move, from running down those steps at breakneck speed, from rushing into traffic. We've seen this. And one even hears, you know, of these incredible stories of children falling into subway tracks and the train just running over them, and it happened, they weren't touched. Children falling out of windows. This very often happens before school begins. There's a child in the school who falls out of a third-story window or something like that, and there they are the first day of school with a little scratch. So, you know, I think anyone who really carries love and observes his or her child well will acknowledge there are times now and then when clearly something was there that was not just the child's instinct or some kind of reptilian brain response, but that really, from outside, seems to have protected that child. One way of describing the angel is to say that the angel lives in the child's etheric body. In fact, we can say that in a truly healthy child, of whom we don't find so many as we used to in the past, that such a child, its whole being, as it were, its whole etheric body is its guardian angel. That the child's etheric body and the guardian angel are essentially one and the same thing. How long does this last? It lasts approximately until the change of teeth, and then the angel starts to withdraw. As the etheric body contracts more and more into the child's physical body, the angel is, as it were, squeezed out and is more and more outside and around the child. And by the time the astral body comes, the angel is pushed out and away even further. And this is why, just as we've seen our little ones rescued from the jaws of death by what we can sometimes only feel was a supernatural visitation, nothing that we could see directly, but whose effects we could see, and this is important. Do people see angels, or do they only see their effects? But in any case, the child is sort of rescued. When children come to adolescence, it's as though we watch them defying their angel. We watch them, you know, doing things in spite of the angel, and we rightfully are always concerned that there's this kind of recklessness. It's as though the child has gotten used to being protected by the angel and doesn't realize the angel is not in as protective a position anymore once the child gets into the adolescent years. This is true as the ego comes as well. The angel steps back and lets the human being more and more become the master of his or her destiny, become his or her own guardian. And I think there's a moment in the life of many a young adult. It generally occurs between 28 and 33, often closer to 28, when for the first time in her life, she really has to make a decision on her own, out of her own judgment. So maybe she makes a list, 10 reasons to stay in New York, 10 reasons to move to Chicago. Wow. They exactly balance out. Okay, here are a few more good reasons to stay in New York. Yeah, but here are a few more good reasons to move to Chicago. 20 reasons, 50 reasons, 100 reasons. It stays completely equal. One way or the other is going to work out. And it is with the agony of such decision-making that the young person starts to enter into the world of the mind soul, starts to assume the responsibilities of adulthood, and starts to recognize that in the absence of the guardian angel, sort of making these decisions for one, the only way you can find out which is the right decision is by making it, acting on it, and then reflecting later whether that was the right decision or not. This is a huge step. And indeed, many a young adult doesn't want to make that. And we're finding, for example, this, you know, almost epidemic in our time, and I'm speaking this in 2011 when the North American economy is in a bit of a shambles, that there are increasing numbers of people in their mid and even late 20s who are still at home with their parents. The immediate reasons are financial, the economy. But one might say the deeper reason is that they still want to be under the wing of their angel, and the family constellation in which that angel sort of lives. They can't yet face a world that is not filled with angelic presence.